Okay, three, two.
Three, two, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacey on Sputnik Radio. Now coming up on the show, we talk to entrepreneur turned Bitcoin maximalist Richard Hart. But first, bum, 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 Bitcoin is dead. Long live Bitcoin, Stacey?
Once again, they're playing taps for Bitcoin. They're saying Bitcoin's dead. They've said it many times, but more bad news pushes Bitcoin's value below $9,000. It did fall below $8,000 after this headline. Bitcoin is now down 55% from its December peak. Remember, it hit about $20,000. Bitcoin's month-long price slide continued as the virtual currency fell below $9,000 for the first time since November. As we published this article, one Bitcoin is worth $8,700. It got down to 7,600, bounced off that. That's down 12% over 24 hours and 55% from December's peak of $19,500.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've been in the Bitcoin for 7 years and I've been in the markets for 30 years. And this is by far the most interesting market experiment and phenomenon ever I've ever seen, probably ever in 100 years. So this is another dramatic chapter. And there are those who argue that this is just another pullback in a long-term bull market, and I happen to fall into that camp. Others are, as you say, calling time on Bitcoin that it's finally met its match with coordinated central bank and corporate activities geared toward snuffing out this rival, this competition. So here we are at this critical juncture.
I think part of the reason why it's always dying and never really dies is that there are a lot of people that really can't believe that such a thing exists, that such a thing as Bitcoin can happen and that it can be real and that this amazing technology and this amazing liberating, you know, sovereign currency could actually be real. So they're always waiting for something to possibly destroy it. But everything that has come along, and as you said, we've been involved in Bitcoin since 2011, and many things have been lobbed at it. It's been hit by all sorts of asteroids and meteorites of the financial world, whether it's Mt. Gox, the big disaster there, the theft there that has now been dwarfed by this latest one, the Coincheck theft in Japan. The article here is saying that the reason why they credit for the crash is that Facebook's announcement that it was restricting cryptocurrency ads. The SEC announced it was shutting down a little-known cryptocurrency project called Arise Bank. And also rumors swirling about Tether, a cryptocurrency whose value is pegged to the US dollar. So these are just some of the rumors. What do you think in terms of Nassim Taleb's sort of anti-fragility thesis that if it survives all this stuff, like it just makes it less fragile?
Yeah, that's true. You know, we always knew there was going to be a rendezvous with the state because having individuals essentially print their own money is going to put the state out of business, and that's going to always set up a conflict. But, you know, the thing about Bitcoin is that it also draws the absolute worst, I don't know what word I can use on this podcast, but the lowest low of society. You know, remember those strips you used to have, cosmetic strips where you put it on your face and it pulls the blackheads out? Bitcoin pulls the blackheads of like the scammers and the promoters and the Johnny Come Latelys and the carpetbaggers. They have all come out of their nooks and crannies and holes, and they are as much a threat to Bitcoin as the state. You know, they don't care about this epic battle between the sovereign individual versus the onerous, lecherous state. No, they don't. So there's a two-pronged attack.
Yes. Well, Bitcoin used to attract more. Now it's mostly to these ICOs and initial coin offerings, all these various tokens. So let's go to Richard Hart. You can find him on YouTube at youtube.com/Richard Hart or at Twitter as Richard Hart Win. Richard Hart, is Bitcoin dead?
No, it's as dead as it's always been. It's died many thousands of deaths and it keeps coming back. You can't kill it. Now, what you can do, however, is hurt the price for a while. And when the most important quality that an asset has for people that are buying it is the price is going up, when the price stops going up, it begets more selling. And so, you know, in the bull market, when we were on our way into December of 2017, and we hit the 20,000 that I predicted, that was beautiful. It was amazing. And then right after we hit that target, we dropped 46%. And then we went up, and then we dropped 46% again, and then we went up. And now we've dropped another gigantic percentage down to a loss that you'd never saw in the bull run up here, where the maximum pullback was 40%. You know, now we've had from 20K down to 7,600. That's a whole lot of percent. And once you get punched in the nose that hard and people realize that this stuff doesn't just go up forever, then one of the most valuable features and reasons why people got involved with it, you know, gets removed. And so everyone that bought it because it was going up has a much smaller reason to buy it now, which leaves you with the diehards that'll just never sell. And the people that see that this will go up again and are willing to wait and see it as a buying opportunity. If this stuff had more real world adoption and more real world demand, then it would reduce this volatility. But since it is digital gold more than it is a currency, you know, when the price gets knocked down, boy, does it get knocked down. I mean, this is unprecedented, the rate at which it's dropped. It's the worst drop I can remember. It's quite bad.
Right. And there are those who argue that the price action is not really anything to consider versus the technology itself. And I remember a quote from Picasso who said that art is a lie that tells the truth. It reminded me of a quote you hear often in the Bitcoin space, that Bitcoin is a scam that ushers in sound money. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, everyone gets something different from the project. So if you want financial sovereignty and you want to have a Swiss bank account and your brain you can carry across borders with you, you know, it serves that function wonderfully. If you want anonymous transactions and you want to do shady things on the internet, it doesn't serve that function at all. If you want something that goes up forever and never has 40% and 60% pullbacks, it serves that function wonderfully for a year or two at a time. And then seems like January, so it just kind of stops doing it. So, you know, depending on where you're at in your life, you're going to get different things out of this project. You know, it still is the most distributed, most secure, stable, least likely to be hacked digital currency that exists. However, there's a lot of other currencies that for most people that never install their own wallet, never control their own keys, never get rid of the counterparty risk. They just leave their coins on an exchange. Whatever IOU is just as good. You know, a Litecoin IOU on some exchange is as good as a Bitcoin IOU, is as good as a Tether IOU. You just, you know, have some little digital account that says the exchange owes you money. And that hurts Bitcoin's value because people are too stupid to actually take their coins off the exchange and take control of their own money, that, you know, they're happy to just buy whatever three-letter ticker is on the exchange. And you have all these fake imposter coins that don't even have blockchains, but have huge values. And it's kind of silly. It's kind of stupid.
So Max and I were involved in Bitcoin when it fell by 90%. It went up to $1,000 and then the Mt. Gox attack or hack, whatever happened, and it went down to about $100. So I wanted to ask you, however, since that time, there is this notion of HODL, hold your coins no matter what. I like to only say hold now because once I saw CNBC start saying HODL and Bloomberg say HODL, I thought, ooh, that's a little bit weird. So what do you think about this fact of hold in this environment where the price is declining rapidly, but you do also notice that the volumes are also declining? Obviously, you want to see capitulation in order for us to really hit bottom. Are we going to get that? Are some people going to break out of this notion of HODL?
I think every investor and speculator has a different time horizon that they focus. Some people are day traders. They get in and out of their trades multiple times in a day. Some people just watch, you know, the weekly candle. They'll trade once a week. You know, everyone has the time frame that they're interested in trading. You know, I held from 30 down to 1 in 2011. And, you know, in hindsight, when you think about how much more money and more Bitcoin you'd have if you were more concerned with what the market was doing and not buying tops and not selling bottoms, you know, you'd have hundreds to thousands of times more money. I don't really like the hold no matter what mindset. You know, it ignores seasonality. It ignores rewarding winners and punishing losers. You know, bad projects get rewarded with the hold mentality because there's a lot of people holding things that aren't Bitcoin, right? They're holding Ripple from $3 down to, you know, under a dollar. And you look at the chart and you're like, yeah, it does this all the time. It does a huge vertical pump and then dies. dies for a long time. It's not even a crypto. You don't even, you know, it's not distributed. If they turn off your money's off. And who are you going to beg? Who are you going to call? Right? Some central server says, it's not your money anymore. And you can't do that in Bitcoin, but you can do that in Ripple, right? So I don't really like the hold no matter what mentality. I think it's okay if you've got a really long time horizon, but if you think about the hundreds and thousands of times more money you would have if you paid attention to the market a little bit, I kind of prefer that.
Right. Now, Richard, your Twitter stream, you often talk about a strategy that you use. I don't know what your current thought is about it, but I guess it's an options strategy where you're not actually taking full positions. I might be wrong, but if that's the case, can you kind of talk on that a little bit?
Sure. Well, in a bull market, when your maximum pullback's 40%, you can go 1x long or 2x long, which basically means, you know, if you put $1,000 in, you're borrowing $1,000 against your $1,000 of coins you had, it's doubling your returns. And as long as it doesn't drop 50% right after you do it, then you're doubling your gains all the way up, right? So to give you a hypothetical, if you had gone 1x long, borrowed 1x the money, right? So you put in 1,000 and then you borrowed 1,000. So in the system, it'd be 2x, but I'm just calling it 1x. You would make from 1,000 to 20,000, you'd make 20 times the coins. So instead of just having $1,000 worth of coin, you'd have $20,000 worth of coins, and the value of the coins went up 20. So your profit would be 400x. So if you just held, your profit would be 20x from 1K to 20K. But if you went 1x long, you'd have 20x the coins as well, which is awesome. Then you'd have 400x money instead of 20x money. So it's super, super powerful as long as you don't slide the leverage too far. If you slide the leverage a little too far and you get a little bit greedy, when that drawdown comes, you won't be able to take the pressure. And you'll panic sell the bottom and you'll lock your losses in. And so it's a strategy that's extremely rewarding. And if you don't have great self-control, extremely dangerous.
Now, of course, Bitcoin went from 1,000 to 20,000. And some in the media are now suggesting that it was the role of Bitfinex Tether. What do you think about this story regarding Tether? There hasn't been much information other than that their auditor has left and that they've been served with a subpoena by the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. What's going on there?
I think that the story is really stupid. So the whole idea of Bitcoin is to get rid of trusted central parties, which is what an exchange is. When you put your coins on an exchange, you no longer have your coins. You have an IOU. Exchanges get hacked all the time. I mean, $300 or $400 million of NEM got stolen from a Japanese exchange a week ago. So the whole idea of Bitcoin is to get rid of exchanges and get rid of middlemen. So if you have an option of having a Tether, which is an IOU on an exchange that you could also use on other exchanges, so it's a little more powerful and you could look at its blockchain and see what's moving around and how many are being printed and all that stuff, that's a slightly better situation than having an IOU on an exchange that isn't transferable anywhere else. This exchange can screw you anyway. They could just zero your balance out and stop taking your phone calls and take all your money anyway. So would you rather have an IOU that's not transferable or an IOU that is? And if you couldn't redeem your Tether for money, complaining on the internet is a religion for people. There's no shortage of complaints. You don't see anyone credible stating that they're not getting their money out. Furthermore, when Mt. Gox had fake money that they were buying Bitcoin up with, you know, pushing the price up, only in the last week have we seen Bitfinex hold a price premium. And the price premium hasn't really been that large. It's been in between, you know, $300 to $150 for the most part. If they were just printing fake Tethers and buying up money and buying up the Bitcoin price, you'd see that premium a lot higher, right?
All right. We got to cut it off there, Richard. Great points about Tether. That's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Richard Hart. Until next week. Bye, y'all.